ready. It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
It's episode 69 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. I've got a great interview with Saitama from Cancer Town 2, a very interesting and unique comic that's being ordered right now, in fact. I think you'll enjoy hearing what he has to say about the book as well as other projects he's working on. I do have to apologize in advance, though. I had some trouble recording it. My voice comes out okay, but his has a little bit of a problem to it every once in a while. I hope it wasn't because I was calling the UK on Skype. But anyway, I think you'll still get a kick out of it, and I think you'll still enjoy it. Just pay a little closer attention, and you'll get everything he's talking about. Then I review this week's comics, and Gianluca Glazer joins me for the week's news and previews. Everything concludes with my preview of the upcoming Batman The Dark Knight Returns animated DVD movie, so you won't want to miss that. There's a lot to get to, so let's get started. I want to welcome back to the podcast Saitama, the creator of such wonderful things as Cancer Town, Indifference Engine, and now Cancer Town 2. How are you doing today, Sai?
Actually, very well. Thanks. And you?
Good. The same. And I'm fascinated to talk about Cancer Town 2. This is a sequel, of course, to the original. And some really interesting things happen in the book. I got a chance to read a preview PDF of it, and it's really cool. You do some really strange and wonderful things, but I guess after Cancer Town, I should have expected that.
Well, we do try to keep people guessing as best we can.
Right. Now, do you want to explain a little bit about what Cancer Town's about?
Okay, I mean, the basic premise of it is that there's a guy called Vince Morley who's got an inoperable brain tumor, living with one foot in this monstrous alternate reality that he calls Cancer Town. And he believes that the tumor allows him to cross over from one reality to this ghastly shadow of reality. And he takes it upon himself, essentially, to conduct these search-rescue missions in and out of Cancer Town, rescuing people, the lost, or the insane. And his job, as he sees it, is to take people out of there before the damage that's done to them psychologically and physically in that place.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the first book is really good, and the second one carries on from that. Do you think that you need to read the first one in order to read the second?
I would say it's pretty much, yeah, essential. You'd have a hard time absorbing everything. There's an awful lot. I mean, the principle behind Cancer Town 2 was to fulfill a series of prophecies that were made by certain key characters throughout the first volume. Mm-hmm. And it's really about bringing all of that to fruition and breaking all the toys and burning the whole place to the ground by the time we're done.
Yeah.
So, I'd say that the first book is pretty much essential reading for the second one to make any sense at all.
Mm-hmm. Are you eventually going to collect these into maybe one volume, put one and two together?
There have been discussions about that. I'm hopeful that that's going to happen. For now, the best that we can do is doing kind of a combo pre-order special. Oh. So just to get both books at a substantial discount. But hopefully, it would be really nice to see them put together in, say, a nicely bound hardcover. Mm-hmm. That's the dream.
Okay, I can see that. Now, you changed artists this time around, right?
Yeah, that was a tough choice because Stephen really was so much of the spirit of that first book. So scheduling problems, he basically couldn't commit to the second one. So we had to find a guy who could really just have that right combination of visceral power and deep-seated personal insanity that would allow him to deal with really what we were going to be throwing at him. And it was very important, I mean, particularly to me, that whoever we ended up with had to approve. Yeah, he had to basically pass the torch. Mm. And so when I was presented with Graham Howard from two separate vectors within a week of each other, the publisher Marcosia sort of put him forward. Mm. And within the same week, I'd been introduced to his work through a publisher called Time Bomb Comics. He was working on a book called Dick Turpin and the Crimson Plague. Mm. And having seen that, you know, and with Stephen Downey's approval, it was just such an easy transition. Well, it could have been a nightmare trying to explain to somebody really how the whole of Cancer Town was going to work. But Graham just nailed it straight out of the gate. So,
Now, had he read the book before?
I believe he had, yeah.
Oh, good. So he was familiar with it. So he had a good idea as to how the things were going to go. So that helps a lot when somebody already knows getting into the situation what they're going to have to do. Did you have to explain any things to him, or did he pretty much know what was happening?
Oh, yeah, he had pretty good grounding, but obviously a key thing was we didn't want him to be handcuffed. by the precedents in the previous book. So you see, the art style he's picked is very much his own. He's not standing in anybody's shadow with this book. So it's got its own distinct look.
Great.
And then, of course, we brought Peter Mason in on the colors, and that added a whole other level to it. So, yeah, I think the, whereas the book looks very different, it still has a kind of core of internal consistency. It's got the two very different styles within the two different realities of the book itself. So as long as we have that, the core discrepancy, I think the book certainly is capable of standing artistically on its own.
Yeah, of course, you're right. There are two different realities. There's the real world, and then there's Cancer Town. And, of course, from the first book, we know that Morley is able to access Cancer Town through Sarah. And that's kind of an interesting relationship, the two. If I remember correctly, he found her abandoned on the street. Is that what happened?
And horribly burned.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, obviously, I don't want, without spoilerizing my own books. But, yeah, Morley was in a place where he was essentially starting to feel very, very lost and very disconnected because of this condition that he has called Petard syndrome, or walking corpse syndrome. Which leads people to believe that they are maybe dead or missing internal organs or invisible or even immortal in some cases. Yeah, but he needed an anchor. And it had to be, because as he was becoming more and more remote from the world, more and more distant, disconnected from it, he found somebody that he reasoned could be of no real value to anybody. So if he's trying to make some kind of a relationship here, it wouldn't matter too badly if he fucked it up. because he could walk away. But that relationship between him and Sarah Gray really came to define him and his place in various worlds. And so, of course, the first thing that we've done in Cancer Town 2 is we've put that relationship in jeopardy. Because now Sarah Gray is being treated in a mental hospital. And they're trying to teach her to live without the part of her that has given rise to Cancer Town itself. And so there's the whole question of what that's going to mean for Morley when she no longer thinks of Cancer Town as a real place, and what that's going to mean for anybody still trapped inside there when she no longer remembers them at all.
Yeah, it's interesting. Now, of course, Morley gets another character involved. His next-door neighbor, Laura, comes seeking solace from him.
We sort of foreshadowed Laura in the first one. She has kind of a walk-on part. And it was really there because I always thought at some point, not in the first volume, but I was going to need an everyday character, somebody untouched by all the craziness. Yeah, so Laura comes to be almost a secondary anchor for Morley in the real world, a reason for him to still be here. And yeah, so hopefully what that allowed us to do from a storytelling perspective was give Morley attention in two directions. So he's being pulled in two directions now, because otherwise it would have been very simple for him to just completely give up. This brain tumor is a death sentence to him. And he's running out of reasons to stay. So we've given him one just there. However frail and tenuous it may be, it's that one last thread that holds him anchored to the real world.
Well, I like the Morley character. He's very interesting. He's got abilities, and he's still, even in this book, trying to figure out exactly what it is he can and can't do. Yeah, he's got other people that he runs into, and I love the namings of them. You know, you've got Head Rush, you've got Paper Cut, you've got all these interestingly named characters, and I always like the way that those people interact with him. How do you create these people?
Ooh, that's awful, I'd say. I mean, some of them just drop straight out of a pure blue sky on me. Others, I mean, like the Peacemaker, I knew there was a need for a sheriff of Cancer Town, somebody who actually did know what the rules were and was geared up to enforce them. So I could feel the shape of the hole in the story that that character needed to fit. And then it was fairly easy to sculpt the character that would plug that hole. But others, really, they're somewhere between sort of guardian spirits and imaginary friends. So all of them had to be within the imaginative reach of, you know, a mentally disturbed child. The kind of nightmare characters. They're named primarily for their function. That's how they choose to define themselves. Each of them has a rhythm for a purpose. I mean, one of the major influences, I guess, of the first book was, do you know When Rabbit Howls? It's a story called When Rabbit Howls. I call it a story, although it's written as a sort of an autobiography, by a woman called Trudy Chase. Who is one of the most highly publicized victims of dissociative identity disorder. Or that's a problematic diagnosis. It's a question of whether it really is a real thing or not. The book itself doesn't help. That's by veering into paranormal nonsense. But still, the idea of it was that this woman had like 50 or more separate personalities, all struggling for attention, all struggling for an outlet inside her. And so the original concept of Cancer Town kind of flowed out of that, albeit tangentially, by taking the next step and wondering what would happen if those personalities actually broke out of the victim's head and started rampaging around, possessing people and forming a world that they themselves could live in.
Now, it's interesting. We still see some of the familiar characters from the first one, including Crosshair, who I always liked, who just looks sort of like a punk rocker to me.
Yeah, he's had some problems, obviously. Yeah, he took somewhat of a, call it a minor physiological setback at the end of the first book. So a lot of the story of Cancer 2 is kind of dealing with the fallout of what they did to Crosshair in the end of the first one.
Well, he's quite the nasty. You know, he just looks funny. He's got a great big X on his head, which is obviously the Crosshair. And I always find that a funny thing about the character. And he's got a lot to do. And of course, Headrush is a big character in more ways than one in this book. Where did the idea for Headrush come from?
Headrush came right from the first one, who's one of many characters that I've cast out as potential characters for the first one. And so I knew he had to come in eventually. We needed a force of pure destruction, a rage monster.
Mm-hmm.
Well, once I started writing his backstory, it kind of occurred to me that there was just too much of it to cram into this book. I was already straining with the number of characters we'd introduced and the number of subplots and the number of individual personal agendas these grotesques would have.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he was the most obvious of the cast-off characters to fully develop and give him more of a front and center role in a second volume.
Mm-hmm.
In the back matter, we're actually just getting the print files put together now, and we're looking at some of the character concept, and we're trying to put into that the original Headrush character design that Stephen Downey did, just to show the lineage of the character and the passing of the torch to Graham.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk particularly, I guess, about the art. I like that sometimes the art was more of a cartoony style, and then you had more of a painted style where I guess the artist did this, what Sarah was putting down in her book that she was explaining the stories. And I like that. I thought that made it a very interesting read because sometimes you were actually looking at her book, which I enjoyed.
It's partly an atmospheric thing, and it's partly functional, because you need to, when you're trying to form a clear distinction between one kind of space and another, having a whole new range, a whole new artistic vocabulary to use is immensely helpful. You can look at a page, you know, any page in that book, you should be able to tell whether we're in the real world or Cancer Town. And then right at the very end, when we start mixing those together, you get this whole sort of vertigo thing happening. And hopefully that's where everything blends together, and finally we have a unified ending.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes any sense at all, I think.
Now, one of the characters I liked was a shadow puppet, who is apparently Papercut's sister.
Yeah, yeah.
She plays a very interesting part. She's so different from the other character. She's kind of black and inky looking as opposed to a more human Papercut. Did you intend for her to be that different and still have them be sisters?
Oh, yeah, because, again, Papercut came straight out of the first volume. I wanted, with Papercut, Shadow Puppet, and Pinfinger, the idea of it was that, well, I wanted to show how things fall apart and transform and are recreated on a continual basis in Cancer Town. So we do that with the landscape all the time. You know, everything is moving, everything's alive, everything's changing. When one of the big players walks in, you'll actually see the terrain start to shift thematically more towards their colors, their palettes, and the shapes of them. And we took that another step and actually had the characters themselves fall apart and change and turn into other things. So you start with, for instance, one very powerful character. It becomes too great, too unbalancing, and it falls apart. And suddenly you've got three other people, aspects of that first thing, and thematically tying that into the story. Shadow Puppet was one of the characters that we didn't end up using for the first volume. But the function that you had, you look at all the things, they're all defensive. They're all these guardian spirits, as I was saying. And we needed somebody who would fulfill the function of the frightened child hiding in a closet. You translate that into Cancer Town terms, what you end up with is a creature that bleeds shadow and hides itself. And obviously, every player has a function within Cancer Town. Obviously, without spoilerizing it too much, we do discuss what Shadow Puppet's purpose is within the structure of Cancer Town, and that becomes a major plot point throughout the story.
I have to say, the end really got to me. I felt strongly when we get to the end, and I'm not going to even hint what happens at the end, but I felt really, you know, strongly about how things concluded after reading both of the books. Is this the end of Cancer Town then, or do you think we might see any more of it?
I think it's done with me.
Okay.
I'd always thought of it as a multi-part story. And it was quite early on, we were sort of discussing it with Stephen Downey, that it really cemented itself as a two-volume book to me. One to build the world and one to burn it down. Because you've got to be fearless about stuff like that. Yeah, so I think probably this will be it.
Okay.
One hates to close the door forever, but I think I'd much rather have it two very tight stories than three rather more bloated ones or... I'd much prefer that everything is kept sharp and tight and in focus. I think two books does that.
Yeah, it's a great book. It's a great fun to read, and you really care about the individual characters, and you can tell them apart from each other, which is something some books I have real trouble with, but I never had trouble in this book knowing who is who. So I like that quite a lot. It's a very strong book. It's a great follow-up to the original comics. So I really like Cancer Town 2. Now, as far as getting it, how do people access this book and the first one?
Well, I'm told it's page 228 of the September previews.
Okay.
And I've got the order code here, actually. Which okay. is unusually well prepared for me, which is SEP-12 0727.
Okay, so that's great. Yeah, we'll get this out in time so people can still order it. If people have already turned in their order forms, be sure to call your store and make sure they include that when they put their order in.
So there is another option. We're running a pre-order special right up until basically until launch. On my website, which is cytotime.com, there's a link right at the top. Pre-orders, we've got a little bonus DVD of extras and scripts and things that we're putting in there as well. Ooh. But it's quite a hefty discount over buying the books individually.
Wow.
So if you want to check that out, that's always an option.
Very cool, very cool. And they access that by going where?
It's www.cydetan.com, cydetan.com.
Okay, so they can do
there's
that.
There's a link right at the top of the page for the pre-order.
And there's no limits. Any place on the globe can pretty much get to it.
Yeah, I think we're doing like £4 global shipping. So.
Oh, great. So that's good. Now, of course, now that this is done, have you got any other projects that you're working on?
Oh, yes. No, there's some I can talk about and some that I can't. Actually, you will remember, I think, you remember the Barry Nugent's Unseen Shadows
yes.
project? The Wrath of God story for the Reverend in the last anthology. Mm-hmm. There's another anthology that's also coming out in November, I'm told.
Mm.
Yeah, so it's like a double launch with Cancer Town at the Thought Bubble Convention here in Leeds.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a story in that, which is based on one of the peripheral characters from the Fallen Heroes novel by Barry Nugent, mm-hmm. Bob Kelsey, who's almost a Kolchak-style reporter, if you remember The Night Stalker. BBC is a fantastic show. Anyway, the guy, a disgraced reporter, essentially now running for his life from a series of cults and various other unfortunate shenanigans.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got a story with him called The Immaculate Abortion of Dina Lee.
Wow.
Which I've done with Valia Capaday, whom you know from White Knuckle, which you did with me earlier this year.
Right.
So there's that. Looking a little further ahead, I've got a paranormal espionage thriller coming up from Marcosi called Phantom Long and the Garden of Dead Liars.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a four-part story for another Unseen Shadows one, four-part called Blood Cries Out. It's another Reverend story. And three or four other things that currently do have artists attached, but I can't talk about just yet.
Okay.
So I like to keep myself busy.
Yeah, I bet. Sounds good. Well, you know, keep it up. We're interested in reading your stuff, so, and good quality stuff. If you want something different, if you're tired of the same old comic fare, I would say pick up one of your books because you'll get something very unique, and I like that a lot.
Cool. Thanks very much. I'm sure the next one will be an all-ages superhero story, so I'll have that base covered as well.
Okay, that'll be good. Well, Cy, it's always good to talk with you, and take care. And I look forward to talking with you again in the future as these other projects come into light.
Cool. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks.
Hey, this is Crazy Joe.
This is Dave, host of Megapodzilla.
The podcast equivalent to a 100-foot radioactive robot lizard.
But with horn-rimmed glasses and a pocket protector.
That's nerdy. We're on the rampage, laying waste to the geek landscape.
We'll talk movies, TV, comics, toys, video games.
And sometimes we talk turkey.
Don't you mean chicken?
That's right. So check us out at Megapodzilla.com.
We're also available on iTunes and the Zoom Marketplace.
Aw, yeah.
Gathered together from the cosmic reaches of the universe, here in this great hall of justice, are the most powerful forces of good ever assembled.
It's Wayne's Comic Review.
Dedicated to truth, justice, and peace for all mankind.
And let's have a look at this week's comics. Since I've spent a lot of time devoted to other comics instead of the zero issues of DC's New 52, I thought this week I would focus on one of the new books that's just getting kicked off, Sword of Sorcery Number Zero. In this new series featuring the long-awaited return of Amethyst, Amy Winston leads a strange life on the road with her mother, so the description goes. She's about to learn why it's all been necessary when she discovers she's the lost princess of Gemworld and has very powerful enemies hunting her. Amethyst is written by Christy Marks, best known for her work on animated TV shows including G.I. Joe, Transformers, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and many more. And she also developed a comic series called Sisterhood of Steel. In the backup story set in a post-apocalyptic wasteland, the monstrous warrior Beowulf was charged with finding and defeating the evil Grendel. As always, I continue to be interested in female lead characters in comics, so I'm pretty happy to see Amethyst return to the pages of DC. We don't have enough of those, in my opinion. It's a good story and sets up future issues. It's perfect timing to kick off this book during the zero issues, and Amy and her mother are very strong women, making a good jumping on point. I particularly enjoyed one part where they both became blondes, and Amy was extremely nonplussed by that. The art's good, powerful, and clear. I really like the fact that the two universes have distinctly different feels to them. That's good because it allows Earth to seem darker, while what will become Gemworld is much more colorful and artsy looking. Very nicely done. I also liked the Beowulf story, which was quite a contrast to the Amethyst tale. No women to be found in that story so far, and it's much more violent, and that provides a perfect balance. Tony Bedard is the scripter, and he's got a good grasp of the various people, including Wiglaf, the son of Weostan, who is a crafty kid. He deceives Beowulf because he has to rely on his wits, something the soldier isn't very good at. It'll be very interesting to see how Beowulf reacts when he finds out that he's been deceived. It's a good, strong zero issue, so I'm looking forward to the first issue next month. And we'll get to the rest of the zero issues. As always, it's tough to pick out which order I like to put them in, but here goes. Justice League was my favorite, with a story about Shazam, otherwise known as Captain Marvel, which was followed by a second tale, this one focusing on Pandora. Batwoman continues to be a standout in the Bat family, as she gives us the boot on the cover, which I like. Birds of Prey shows Batgirl meeting Black Canary. Next, I enjoy the pricey DC Universe, which included the Blackhawk's Mother Machine, Hawk and Dove, Mr. Terrific, and OMAC. Green Lantern New Guardians is a prologue to the Third Army event, while Legion of Superheroes focuses on Brainiac 5. Also, Nightwing introduces Dick Grayson's origin via the New 52. Red Hood and the Outlaws describes how Jason Todd came back to life after being killed by the Joker. Then Wonder Woman tells us how she became a star pupil of Ares. Supergirl answers who sent her to Earth, while Captain Atom is sadly the final issue of the series. I can't believe it. Blue Beetle number 0 follows the Scarab before it merged with Jamie, while Catwoman tells us how Selina Kyle took on this other identity. Other books worth picking up this week included Batman Beyond Unlimited number 8, Before Watchmen Night Owl number 3, the trade paperback for Penguin Pain and Prejudice, and Young Justice number 20 from DC Comics. Peanuts Volume 2 number 2 from Boom Studios is out. The Walking Dead number 102 came out from Image. Doctor Who Volume 3 number 1, Jericho Season 4 number 2, and Star Trek The Next Generation Hive number 1, with Star Trek Ongoing number 13 and True Blood Ongoing all came out from IDW. Red 5 gave us Atomic Robo, The Flying She-Devils of the Pacific number 3, and Atomic Robo Real Science Adventures number 6, and Dynamite provided Shadow number 5 and Warlord of Mars Deja Thoris number 15. And those are the books that came out this week.
It's time for this week's news and previews, and with me, as always, is Gianluca Glazer. How are you doing today, Gianluca?
I'm doing well, Wayne. How are you?
Good. Pretty good. What news should we be aware of this week?
All right. Well, there's some interesting stuff going on. Did you know that Iverse Media joined the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund as a corporate member?
No.
Well, it's true. It happened. Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, and Iverse, the digital comic company that I really don't use.
Okay.
Sorry. But they announced that Iverse has joined as the newest corporate member. Iverse CEO Michael Murphy explained the move, quote, "The entire mission of the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund is something we at Iverse believe in very strongly, and we're honored to help them fight the good fight," he said. "Of particular concern to us is the increasing number of challenges to freedom of expression that put independent creators and smaller publishers at risk."
Mm.
Interesting stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. In some Marvel news, Thunderbolt number 1 is set for release in December. Red Hulk will lead in that. First appearing in Incredible Hulk number 449 in 1997. The Thunderbolts has largely been a team comprised over the years of reformed supervillains. This latest incarnation heads to comic shops in December and will consist of Venom, Elektra, Deadpool, and the Punisher, along with team leader General Thunderbolt Ross, a.k.a. the Red Hulk. It's going to be written by Daniel Way, who's written Deadpool, and the art's going to be by Steve Dillon, who has worked on Punisher Max.
They pick some name characters to be in there. Venom seems to be doing well. Because always in the past they've had like Songbird and other ones. Characters that nobody really knew.
Yeah. Another Marvel news is writer Dennis Hopeless, who's written X-Men Season 1, and artist Kev Walker, who's worked on Thunderbolts, will be on the Marvel Now title Avenger Arena Number 1 in December.
What's the concept of that?
Let's see. Avengers Arena centers around 16 young superheroes pulled from the Runaways, the Avenger Academy, and Darkhawk, thrown together on a deserted island known as Murder World, and forced into a life-or-death combat with only one survivor. Wow, that sounds a little similar to maybe Hunger Games.
Yeah, kind of. That must be what they're going to do with the Avengers Academy kids, or some of them at least.
All right. Talk about crazy stuff here.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a new graphic novel line coming out in the near future. Penguin Berkeley and NAL Division will launch Ink Lit, a new graphic novel imprint, in October to publish original graphic novels and adaptations of prose fiction, the company announced. New line will be held by Rich Johnston, not Rich Johnston, not the Bleeding Cool guy.
Mm-hmm.
There's a different Rich Johnson, who co-founded Hatchet's Yen Press and was VP of Trade Book Sales at DC. Some of their announcements are Alpha and Omega Volume 1 and 2, collecting the 8-issue Dynamite Entertainment adaptation of Patricia Briggs' Cry Wolf. Interesting. Gravesite, a collection of Dynamite adaptations of the first book of Charlaine Harris's Harper Connelly's mystery series. Cemetery Girl, co-written by Charlaine Harris and Christopher Golden. I know who Christopher Golden is, so.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The Lunatic Cafe, book 4 of Laurel K. Hamilton's Anita Blake series.
Mm.
A lot of prose stuff.
Wait a minute, that's interesting because the Laurel K. Hamilton stuff, that used to be on Marvel. Marvel used to do that.
Hmm. Well, I guess maybe it wasn't a big seller for them, and I would imagine maybe they decided to move on.
That
sometimes
was the
rights, you know, expire after a while. And
well, they used to do them, but they stopped recently. I haven't seen that book in a while, and I like the book. I was interested because that was the remnants of, I can't remember the name of the brothers, who did the Hedge Knight and things like that.
Yeah.
They took them over to Marvel, and then Marvel ended up taking possession of them, and then that was the last thing that they had done. That's too bad. I like their stuff.
Yeah. Some interesting movie news. The Why the Last Man movie is back in play.
Mm.
Well-placed sources told Vulture that the studio is very pleased with the script from Matthew Fetterman and Stephen Skaia. The project has become a priority for the studio, and New Line has begun the process of meeting with director candidates to hire for the project.
Mm.
This is obviously Why the Last Man was a series by Brian K. Vaughan.
Mm-hmm.
It was very popular, ran for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting concept, too.
Yeah, I never actually sat and read that thing. I was always wanting to get back to the first issue, and I could never find it. So I've always been waiting to see. I guess what I'll have to do is wait for the movie, I guess.
Yeah, probably worth it. The Harvey Awards were recently announced. You had winners such as J.K. Williams, Mark Wade, and several other fine folks. Probably, I wouldn't be surprised if Batman won a thing or two.
Mm.
Best single issue or story goes to Archaea with Jim Henson's Tale of Sand. Best artist was J.H. Williams III for his Batwoman series.
Wow.
Mark Wade continues to rack up writing awards. He came out of the Eisners with a lot of awards for Daredevil, and he picks up Best Writer for, again, Daredevil. And Daredevil won Best Continuing or Limited Series. So.
Interesting.
Very, very interesting. J.H. Williams III also won for Best Cover Artist. No big shocker there. And Dark Horse Presents won for Best Anthology, just proving that when it comes to the Best Anthology category, people just go with whatever's the most popular, most well-known book, as opposed to what is actually the best anthology. I personally think so. It's crazy. Come on. The anthology's okay, but Yiddishkeit was such a better anthology. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Just my two cents.
Okay.
But here's some sad news for you, Wayne. Mm. I don't know if you know this, Wayne, but Lock and Key is coming to an end.
Yeah, I know. I like that book. They've got their last series is beginning up.
That's right. Lock and Key Omega marks the end of the Lock and Key series. It's going to be a 7-issue series. Issue 1 is going to come out in November.
They talked a little bit during Baltimore, the IDW people did, about the TV show. The rights still remain with Fox, and they are not able to release that at this point. They put out a pilot, and they showed it at San Diego Comic-Con when I was there a year ago. Yeah. But they haven't put it out yet. I'm sure it's available online if you want to really look for it. Mm-hmm. That must have been an expensive pilot because of all the things they do in the comic, opening up people's heads with keys and stuff like that. They require a lot of computer-generated stuff.
Absolutely. Definitely a lot of CGI.
Mm-hmm.
It's being described as the decisive battle for Key House must be fought. Debts and spirits must be settled.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Sad, sad day.
Yeah.
And let's see, in other interesting TV movie news, Warner Brothers has given a new name to the 300 sequel. Mm-hmm. It's going to be called 300 Rise of an Empire.
Oh, I thought it'd be 301 or 600 or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Whatever happened, speaking, we talked earlier about the best, worst anthology
mm-hmm.
Dark Horse Presents. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in the early issues of like a year ago, Dark Horse Presents had some preview pages of, I think in the very first issue that they did,
mm-hmm.
preview pages of Frank Miller's written sequel to 300.
Mm-hmm.
And then we haven't heard anything since then,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Right.
So I doubt this movie, 300 Rise of an Empire, has anything to do with this book or with Frank Miller's proposed sequel.
He'll let us know if that's the case.
Yeah. Well, the actual 300 film sequel is coming out in August 2nd, 2013. But yeah, it was called Xerxes, I remember, mm-hmm. was Frank Miller's. Yeah. And yeah, okay, here it is. The film is actually going to be based on Frank Miller's yet-to-be-published Xerxes.
Ah.
So, yes, the key word here is yet to be published.
Ah, okay. That's interesting.
It is interesting. And then final news from Vertigo here. They announced a deluxe hardcover edition of Brian Azzarello and Eduardo Rizzo's creator-owned miniseries Spaceman.
Mm.
Azzarello and Rizzo, you know, worked together on 100 Bullets,
mm-hmm.
which ran for a long time as well. It was kind of like you had them and Why the Last Man were kind of like these big, long-running series that were going on in Vertigo at the time. But anyway, the Spaceman collects all 9 issues plus the origin story from Strange Adventures number 1. The 244-page book will be available to the direct market, that means your comic book stores, on November 7th, and other retailers, which means the Barnes & Nobles and whoever's not been put out of business yet, on November 13th. It's going to be a $25 book, though.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
It collects over 9 issues of stuff. So.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it for me, really. Any news going on?
Yeah, let me talk about a couple of things that I know that's happening.
Yeah.
In the Avengers versus X-Men, apparently there's going to be a major death. It wasn't revealed until Marvel put out a promo thing about it, exactly who that was. There was a lot of speculation it was going to be Scott Summers. And Scott Summers is sort of going the complete route to turning into a piece of work, as some people like to call him. He's not doing all that well.
Right.
He's gone from hero down to being sort of a fanatic, crazy person. So, but he's not going to be the one that's going to die. It's actually going to be, and if you don't want to know, don't listen to this little bit. But
turn it off.
Yeah, first, or go fast forward.
On the top right of your browser.
Yeah, it's actually going to be Professor X is going to die.
Professor X is going to die for all of, half a year?
Yeah, that's the thing. Nobody takes these Marvel deaths seriously anymore.
Nobody takes any comic book death seriously.
Yeah.
Any comic book death.
Well, he's supposed to die. I think it's going to be number 12, which is going to be coming out before long, and that'll wrap up, I think, the series. And we'll see what happens from there. And then, of course, the Avengers plus X-Men will be starting up before long.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how that's going to go. We'll see how that moves going forward. Anyway, the other news that's coming out, Jim Lee is leaving Justice League as the artist with issue number 15.
Mm-hmm.
It took longer than I figured. I thought he'd be gone long before this, but sure. He's moving on to another major DC project.
Yeah.
The people who are replacing him are people that Jeff Johns has worked with in the past, Ivan Reis and Joe Prado.
Right.
He's been doing Aquaman. I think he's done Green Lantern in the past. They're going to start out with a crossover story with Aquaman. Of course, Geoff Johnston writes that book, so that'll be interesting. And they said there's going to be new members coming in. Shazam, which, of course, the rest of us know is Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
And there's an all-new Atom is going to be appearing. So those will be interesting things coming off.
Yeah.
So, and they're going to be heading towards the Trinity War. If you've got the free comic book day book, they talked about Trinity War in there. So,
yeah, I had an announcement a week or two ago regarding Jim Lee possibly doing a series with Scott Snyder.
Could be.
Yeah.
Could be. Wouldn't surprise me because Mr. Snyder is hot right now. So,
sure. I think it was like a Superman type project.
Oh, that would be cool. Superman needs that right now, I think.
Yes. Not like the actual Superman line, but something like a spinoff, maybe a darker Superman.
Mm-hmm. And DC also announced some new books that are coming out. There's going to be another JSA The Liberty Files, which was an Elseworlds format alternate universe story. This is going to be called JSA The Liberty Files, The Whistling Skull. And it'll begin in December. It's written by B. Clay Moore with art by Tony Harris.
Right.
So it'll be good. Another book is The Human Bomb, is going to be written by Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray.
Right.
And they seem to take these minor characters and give them a play. They did the Ray. They've done some other ones, so that'll be interesting. There's going to be a digital series that'll, of course, come out afterwards in paper based on the new CW Arrow series that'll be coming out. Then there's going to be die-cut covers for the Joker crossover, which is going to go through all the Bat books, starting with Batman number 13.
That sounds fun.
And they're changing artists on Dial H for Hero. He's going to be an Italian artist by the name of Alberto Ponticelli. I'm sure I butchered that, but
sure. He's
been doing Unknown Soldier, and he's going to be picking that up. So that'll be kind of fun for that. One other thing I want to mention for sure is that DC Nation on Cartoon Network will begin airing new episodes of Green Lantern and Young Justice starting Saturday, September 29th.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to get people to know that Green Lantern will be based on Earth this time. And he's going to be running into Guy Gardner, the voice of which is the guy who played Batman in Batman Brave and the Bold. He's now playing Guy Gardner. So that'll be interesting.
That is interesting.
So I like those. Both of those series I really enjoy. My Saturday mornings have been great watching those. I think even the CGI with Green Lantern has grown on me over the time. And the music, of course, is fantastic. Just great music. And Young Justice Invasion also will have new episodes. And I think that will be good fun. I like that show a lot. That tends to be an ongoing storyline from week to week. They do have individual stories, but it has an overarching thing that's going on.
Right.
So very good stuff. I really like that stuff. So I wanted to make sure I got that mentioned so people would be able to tune back in. If you're not watching the reruns, then be sure to watch the new ones when they start up on the 29th.
Gotcha. All right.
Okay, as for September 26th, what are you looking for on that day?
All right, there's a couple of good Dark Horse comics coming out. Concrete Volume 1, Depths. This was taken from the overrated Dark Horse Presents anthology, but the Concrete stories themselves were really good. I enjoyed it, so they're being collected into a trade paperback.
Mm-hmm.
The Goon, issue number 42, that's coming out. Mm-hmm. Always a fun book. Mm-hmm. Over on DC side, they're debuting Talon Zero. That's spun off from the Court of Owls storyline by Scott Snyder. So it comes out with its first issue zero. That's very appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Justice League Dark has a zero issue, as does I, Vampire. And in terms of their other non-zero book, and then Batman Incorporated has a zero as well, and so does Batman The Dark Knight.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of non-zero books, we have Before Watchmen, Ozymandias number 3. We also have Lobo Poster. It's a new printing, but it's a Lobo Portrait of a Bastich.
Yeah.
Paperback. I always loved Lobo, so.
Yeah.
Very fun. And then on Vertigo's side, they have American Vampire number 31, Scott Snyder, and they have a couple of trades for American Vampire. Volume 3 gets a trade paperback treatment. It's already been out as a hardcover, and then they release a new Volume 4 as a hardcover as well. So, a lot of American Vampire there for you.
Mm-hmm.
On IDW's side, they have another Dave Stevens collection, Dave Stevens Stories and Covers hardcover. It's kind of pricey, though. It's $50. So, you know, if you have to have everything that Dave Stevens does, because they've already done the Dave Stevens sketchbook.
Mm-hmm.
They have the Rocketeer of various editions. So, but if you have to have everything, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Mars Attacks number 4 comes out. So that's a good one. Mm-hmm. And on Image's side, I've been waiting for this since it was announced, but Happy, number one, goes on sale.
Yeah.
Grant Morrison and Derek Robertson.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be very good and dark.
Mm-hmm.
Involves like a crazy Santa that's kidnapping kids.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait to check it out. Grant Morrison's work. And it's going to be interesting. It's a non-superhero story. And it's his first book over here at the Image label. And probably more to come in the future, considering I think he's kind of moving away from DC.
Yeah.
So that's it for me.
Okay. Again, we find an interesting announcement that I didn't know before. Mm-hmm. It looks like Voodoo number zero is the final issue from DC.
I'm not shocked.
Yeah, it hasn't done all that well.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that Vampire hasn't gone with it, but I guess Vampires have a little more.
It's done a little better. It's also more critically acclaimed. And I'm hoping if they get rid of iVampire that they put Joshua Hill Fialkov on something else. He's just too talented a guy to only be doing one DC book. They gave Rob Liefeld three books. And they only gave Joshua just one book. He had Hawk and Dove, Rob Liefeld, and they moved him once that was canceled onto three books. Some crazy stuff there.
Yeah, it's interesting. Also, a couple of other zeros I think from DC deserve mentioning.
Sure.
All-Star Western. Aquaman, then there's Flash, yeah, Flash is out, and Fury of Firestorm, the Nuclear Man. I talked with Joe Harris about that last week, and looking forward to that. It's his final issue on that. And then there's National Comics, which they do every once in a while. This is Rose and Thorn. They keep reinventing these older, lesser-known characters, and I'm looking forward to that, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Palmiotti and Gray, Phantom Lady number 204 comes out, Red Lantern Zero, Savage Hawkman Zero, which I think is Liefeld's last one on that one.
Yes.
Superman Zero, Teen Titan Zero, and that'll take care of that. When we get to Dynamite, there's Kevin Smith's Bionic Man number 13, although they don't actually say Kevin Smith on the cover anymore, as I talked with Mr. Hester a couple weeks ago. They actually just consider that to be just a Bionic Man now.
Mm-hmm.
Spider number 5, which I really like. This is a good one.
Yeah.
We get to IDW. I like, there is Star Trek, The Next Generation, Doctor Who, Crossover, Assimilation Squared number 5, which has been great fun. I've enjoyed that book. Such a good thing to do. They've got to put that out in hardcover as far as I'm concerned.
I agree.
From Image, we get Super Dinosaur number 14.
That's Robert Kirkman. Same guy who does all those scary zombies, writes a kid's book.
Yeah, it's funny about that. He does those kinds of things. I guess he's determined to appeal to kids. From Marvel, interesting enough, we were talking about Laurel K. Hamilton's book. Marvel's putting out Anita Blake, Vampire Hunter, Circus of the Damned, Volume 3, The Scoundrel trade paperback.
Wow. So Anita Blake, just to educate me, since I don't read, at least I read real books.
Okay.
Anita Blake is what? It's a series of books? Is it like a
series of novels.
Yeah, is it normally this action-y? Does she normally deal with the undead? And
yeah, she's Blake is. Yeah, she's a vampire hunter. She's also somebody who can. Well, she does various supernatural things. She's got ties to a vampire leader.
Uh-huh.
She's got all different kinds of things. As the books went around, they got more and more sexual, which may be why Marvel decided to stop where they did.
Uh-huh.
They said after that book, it becomes more of a porn setup than adventure.
Uh-huh.
So that's what they're doing with that. I liked them. I thought they were interesting. I didn't go out of my way to get them, but I guess they might have decided that's the end of that.
Mm-hmm.
So then there's this Takio number 3, which is kind of based on Japanese things. There's two sisters who have superpowers. And it's not a bad little book. I kind of like it, actually. So I'm looking forward to that. It came out as a hardcover of one. Now it comes out as monthly books. From Oni Press, the Wasteland Volume 7 trade paperback is it. And go back to the Dark Horse ones. Axe Cop, President of the World, number 3 of 3.
Oh,
I can't believe that.
I missed that.
I can't believe that's already out.
I think the last time I did the show with you, I announced an Axe Cop.
Series.
I don't see it on the thing I'm looking at. Maybe the one I announced last week got delayed a week.
Possible. It's possible. And DC has one more big thing, the Green Lantern Sinestro Corps War. It's coming out in the Absolute Edition, which is like $100, which means a big size with a slip cover on it. So that'll be good stuff. There's always good things with that.
Yes.
And on that note, we'll call it quits for this week's news and previews. Thanks, Gianluca, as always, and we'll talk with you again next week.
Absolutely, Ryan. Thank you.
That was music from Batman, The Dark Knight Returns, Part 1, which is coming out this week. And I thought what I would do is give you a preview of what to expect. Of course, I'm a big fan of the Frank Miller original series that came out in 4 issues a long time ago. And I even have a leather hardcover of it that I talked with Joe Harris about recently. My expectations are really high, and I've loved the previews that I've seen from it. They are following it pretty closely, apparently. Now, there are some changes I noticed when I watched it, and I managed to get a hold of a preview copy, which was really good. I have to say, I like the thing a lot. It's very good. They've got some excellent voices. I'm a big Kevin Conroy fan, and he's normally the one I want to do Batman all the time. But I think Peter Weller actually did a pretty good job on the older Batman and Bruce Wayne. He's got a very deep, gravelly voice that fits the mood real well, and he delivers all the trademark Frank Miller lines, so I liked him. Michael Emerson only does a few lines as the Joker, but he already gave me chills, so I found that interesting. Alfred's good. The Commissioner Gordon voice is very good. They're all really well done, including the young Robin. So it's a good thing all around for the voices. The animation is strong and clear and quick, and I liked it very well. The only thing I was concerned about was the fact that it looks like it's modern day Gotham City, and the books, they make a real effort to show the television channels all look sort of futuristic, and you don't actually get to see people's faces, they're more like shadows. And this we get to see everybody's face head on, and it looks very much like it's a television studio from today. I was kind of disappointed by that. I would like to have seen some other stuff going on and make it a little truer to what we've seen. But that's kind of a quibble. I like the way that it goes. The pacing's fast, story's interesting. They do leave out some of the more sexual and violent aspects of it, including the image where the very young Robin leaps up on Bruce Wayne when he comes back from being revitalized by the Spirit of the Bat. So I was sorry to see that go, but I can understand why. If you're going to show this to a kid, you're probably not going to want to see that kind of a thing. Still, it's a great video. Lots and lots of things. I can't wait to see the second part. There's a preview on the disc that you actually get to see. Mark Valley is going to be Superman. Of course, as I said, Michael Emerson will be the Joker. And we'll see those two conflicts really well done. How they're going to handle the Joker, I don't know. Because he actually, we won't spoil that. But let's just say that the Joker meets an incredible end in the book. And then, of course, he has to take on Superman. Batman being Batman, has to figure out how to deal with Superman, which he does, of course, because he's Batman. I liked it a lot. I think you will, too. We won't see the second part until 2013. But until then, I'll be happy to have a look at this one. Of course, I'm going out to buy my full copy very shortly once it hits the stores. So don't think I'm going to rest on this preview copy. So I heartily endorse Batman, The Dark Knight Returns, Part 1. And that's a wrap for this episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Be sure to be back next week when we'll have plenty of news, reviews, interviews, and previews. But until then, keep reading your comics.
Tell me if this sounds familiar. You hacked League systems, disobeyed protocol, and endangered your lives. And your initiative resulted in the capture of 3 escaped felons, proving Warden Strange runs Bell Rev as a cover for criminal activity. Well done.